You're listening to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Big John McCarthy has witnessed the best that the UFC had to offer.
That is it! Game, set, match! We have a new champion!
Your backstage pass to the world of mixed martial arts and combat sports on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network.
Let's get it on!
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and me, Sean Wheelock. Every week on this podcast, John and I give you an inside look at MMA and combat sports, always separating fact from fiction. On this week's program, we'll discuss last week's weight-cutting summit hosted by the California State Athletic Commission in Los Angeles, which both Big John and I attended, as did representatives of the UFC, Bellator World Series of Fighting, as well as fighters, physicians, and ABC President Mike Mizzouli. And we'll examine the Instagram post of Conor McGregor, in which he wrote about the idea of landing strikes to the head of John following his spectacular win versus Jose Aldo at UFC 194. Plus, as we do on every single episode of Let's Get It On, Big John will answer your questions. Submit them via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, via SpeakPipe on our website, and on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Remember that you can download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And of course, you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Let's Get It On is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/letsgetiton. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, and MP3 player. Last Thursday afternoon, John and I were in downtown Los Angeles as invited guests of the California State Athletic Commission's outstanding weight-cutting summit. Full credit to Andy Foster, a former pro MMA fighter who is now the executive director of the California Commission, for creating such a phenomenal forum where vital information was presented, dissenting views were welcome, and a true exchange of ideas and opinions took place in a friendly and open atmosphere. So for me, John, it was great, but the superstar of the proceedings was Dr. Eddie Ayoub. He's the vice president of the Association of Ringside Physicians. He spoke and spoke like a normal human being, very candidly, didn't speak down to anybody, didn't speak above anybody, and he spoke on severe weight cutting, the resulting potential dehydration, and the dangers of both on a fighter's brain and on a fighter's vital organs.
Well, now you know what it's like to be me and have to put up with Eddie Ayoub all these years that I've had to work with him. Now, Eddie is a phenomenal ringside physician, and his, you know, his main goal is the safety of fighters, and he's being passionate. That's the best part of what he was doing when, you know, he was speaking, because every time someone would come up with a dissenting view on, you know, what he's putting out that he knows is factual, he was very passionate in putting it in very simple terms of, you know, well, the fighter can take a big shit if he's going to eat all that food. Or,
that was great.
You know, or something in that fashion. That's Eddie. And, you know, the thing to understand with this entire thing, Eddie doesn't come from a background where he doesn't understand fighting. He's been part of this for a long time. He is the vice president of the Ringside Physicians Association. He does a phenomenal job with that organization in getting ringside physicians all over the country, you know, to bring their levels up to the standards that they need to be so they can perform the right way for fights, so they're not stopping fights early, so they understand exactly what's going on in situations, they understand what they should be doing with the referees, all these things. That's what Eddie is there for, and that's what he's attempting to do. And this summit was just a, you know, something to kind of bring him forward because of his expertise in the field of saying, hey, look, we have a problem. And if we don't address this problem, and this is what Eddie's big thing was, if we don't address this problem, when someone dies here in the United States, it is our fault because we know it's a problem. And if we don't do something about it, we're the ones that need to take responsibility for it.
John, I've been doing a lot of interviews talking about this to the media and talking about this privately to my friends, my fighters. I was at a party with my kids from my gym, so there were a lot of pro and ammy fighters there. We were talking about this, and what struck me is revelatory. is the fact that Dr. Ayoub said no matter how much you think that you're rehydrated, no matter how much weight you've put back on after weighing, no matter how much water you've had or Pedialytes or Gatorade or Powerade, even if you've had an IV, the minimum that you can fully rehydrate your brain and your vital organs after severe dehydration is 36 hours. I had no idea. I mean, that really, it was revelatory and it was shocking to me. 36 hours at the absolute minimum, no matter how good you think you feel, no matter how much weight you've put back on.
And that's the whole point. That's what we're trying to get people to understand is look at, because you feel better, and this is the whole point of the IV. What people don't understand is they're looking at it saying, you know, you're taking away IVs from fighters. You're making it less safe. You're making it more dangerous for the fighters because you're taking IVs. That's something that's going to help them. And they don't understand that it's only helping them to feel better. And medically, we know that IV going in their body, obviously they're dehydrated and they need the fluids, but the IV being put in there is only making them feel better. It's not actually making them better for the fight. And that's why we're in this position of looking at getting rid of IVs is because we don't want them to just feel better. We want them to be better. And the only way for them to be better is to hydrate in a fashion that whether they take it through a needle in their arm or they take it orally, it's going to do the same thing for them physically as far as them being able to compete in the fight. The placebo effect of them feeling better is not beneficial because it actually makes fighters think they can cut more weight. And we don't want them cutting more weight. We want them getting closer to their actual walk around weight. You know, that we're not saying, hey, you know, if you're 170 pounds walking around, you need to fight in the 170 pound class. That's not exactly what we're saying either. We understand that there's going to be some weight cutting going on, but we can't have the drastic weight cutting that has been taking place because it's unhealthy and it's unsafe. And we do have fighters dying. We haven't had them die here in North America, but they've been dying around the world now in several locations. And we have had instances here in the United States and in the state of California. You know, when Heenan Bahal passes out and knocks his head against the frickin' porcelain of a hotel tub and can't fight because of a weight cut, that's a problem here in the States. That's a problem here in California. And so these things are happening, and we have got to do something to change the culture. And that's the biggest problem, is we're trying to change an actual culture, a thought process, a way of doing things that has been instituted almost for the length of our sport and has deeper roots when it comes to guys doing it from amateur wrestling and boxing. And boxers do not cut near the weight that MMA fighters do. And that's where we need to start to bring things about, no different than what, you know, what the UFC has done with USADA. Take a look at the difference that you're seeing in fighters now compared to a year ago. Take a look at the fights that just happened on Fox. Let's take a look at Alistair Overeem. Now, I love Alistair. He's a phenomenal fighter, but his physique looks different. Why? Well, he has been put in a position where he cannot do the things that he was doing before. That's exactly what we need to do with the weight cutting situation. We need to put it to where fighters are not losing so much goddamn weight that the health and safety of them making through that fight is being adjusted and altered by how much they're losing.
We have a really smart listenership around the world for Let's Get It On. All of you are knowledgeable fans, and I know there are a great many of you in our listening audience who are real hardcores. So I think everybody listening to our program has the awareness that there's a lot of weight cutting, but I thought it would be beneficial for this program to actually give you real life data. So I talked to a friend of mine. He was totally candid. He just said, please don't use my name for this show. But I talked to a friend of mine this morning, so he'll be totally up to date on his weight. All I can tell you is he's a top 20 lightweight in the world, and he wrestled at the NCAA Division I level in the United States. So again, he's a lightweight. He's a 55er. So right now, as of this morning, prior to recording our program, he weighs 187. All right? So he's 33 pounds above the lightweight limit. I just saw him within the last week. I can tell you he's in great shape. He is not fat at all, and he's at 187. He told me that he likes to be the day before the weigh-in, so you're talking 2 days before the fight, between 165 and 167. So going in, and this is someone who's been cutting weight a long time, so that is his plan, to be 10 to 12 pounds over essentially 28 to 30 hours before he's getting on the scale, even 24 hours before he's getting on the scale, and about 48 to 52 hours before he's fighting. In the cage for his fight, he likes to be right about 177. So that's 22 pounds above the lightweight limit. He also told me that he had a fight once where he decided to jump on the scale 2 hours following the weigh-in. He said he used an IV, but it was allowed in this situation. He gained 13 pounds in 2 hours. This is what we're talking about. It's not speculation. Well, we know guys cut a lot of weight. This is every day. And again, this is a friend of mine, top 20 in the world. But John, this is very, very typical. And we're starting to hear guys who are now walking at 40 or even 45 pounds above their fighting weight.
It is. And everything is about, we want to be the bigger, stronger guy. And you're not gaining the strength. You know, if you're walking around at 177 pounds and you cut to 155, you need to understand when you're cutting, you're losing a lot of fluids here, but you're also losing some muscle tissue. A little bit is coming off. But what happens is the muscle can only respond through the electrolytes that you put into it. And again, your body's not going to fully rehydrate for 36 hours. So when you throw this giant deluge of fluids into your body, the muscles, if you know, as basic as it would be, you know, you could pick up, we'll say, at your 177 pounds, you can deadlift. And this is, you know, we're not talking about deadlifting, but we'll say you can deadlift 400 pounds, okay? And then you lose that weight, and you do your weight cut, and then you come back and you throw those fluids in, and you can get right back to that 177-pound limit, and you go to lift that 400 pounds, and it's not going to break the floor. You're not going to be able to pick it up because you're not going to be as strong as you think you're getting yourself back to at that 177-pound. That's not going to happen because your muscles do not have the elements they need to fire and do the things that you want them to do in the proper fashion. Since you depleted them and now have thrown this fluid back in, they're not going to work the same way and you're not going to be as strong. But this is the scientific part of this whole thing where fighters don't look at it that way and people aren't looking at that. They're saying, well, you weigh the same, you're going to be just as strong. No, you're not. And we want the fighters to know you're not. By losing the weight that you're losing, you're also losing some of that strength. You need to get yourself closer to the weight that you are going to fight at so you can have that same strength level. You know, the big thing is the reason MMA fighters are losing so much is, you know, the grappling part. When you're having to, you know, clinch and control people on the ground and you're using that weight, that's why it's different than boxers. It takes energy to move weight. It takes energy to have to handle that weight. And all of that push is why fighters are wanting to be the bigger guy. They want you to have to handle that weight. They want you to have to hold them with that more weight. But sometimes it'll get to the point where the level of what you're going to gain is going to be diminished and you're not gaining what you think. And we've got to get them. We've got to start to change the culture of what's going on because they're so used to doing what they've been doing that they look at this as, oh my God, you're going to alter my career. Oh my God, you know, this is the end. When it's not the end, it's not going to change their career. It's only going to hopefully make everybody in this sport, and we're not talking just UFC fighters or Bellator fighters. We're talking, this is needing to be done because of all the small shows and fighters that are out there fighting. You know, they're watching and they're hearing about guys like you're talking about losing all this weight, and so then they're trying to do it. And they're just not as good at it. And they don't understand how to do it the right way. And they're coming into these small show fights in a fashion that they are screwed up. And what they're doing is not only going to screw them up for that fight, it's going to help screw them up for the rest of their life. They're going to have kidney problems. They're going to have all these things that are occurring. When you have a fighter that gets examined by a doctor at the fight, and he comes into this fight with a heart rate of about 120 beats per minute. it's telling the doctor you're dehydrated. You got a problem because you should have a heart rate somewhere around 60, 55, 50 beats per minute. But your heart is reacting to the fact that it doesn't have the electrolytes and the fluids that it needs. And it's having to beat at a rate that is ridiculous for a healthy athlete. And this is what guys are doing. And we got to stop the culture that that we have created and that we have let go on for so long. This has got to change. The one thing that everyone talks about, everyone was all, a lot of people complained about, performance enhancing drugs, and they should. Okay. And there's a lot of guys out there that were doing performance enhancing drugs. Well, I can tell you 100% of fighters are cutting weight. Everybody. And it's a problem, and we have to deal with it.
And trying to find a solution to the problem, John, because you and I care so passionately about MMA. We're, of course, on the new MMA Rules and Regulations Committee. We were appointed by the new ABC president, Mike Mazzulli, back in July. 10 of us on this committee. You're one of three referees, Kevin McDonald and Rob Hines are the other two. We have Randy Couture. We have Matt Hughes, Jeremy Horn. 10 of us in total. And so what you and I presented from our MMA Rules and Regulations Committee at this weight cutting summit put on by the California State Athletic Commission is our proposal to then move to the medical committee of the ABC for further study. And we hope it will go to the general body membership of the ABC. So this is essentially covering all of the commissions, state, provincial in Canada, and Native American in both the US and Canada moving forward. We want to reclassify welterweight from 170 to 165 and then add three new weight classes, 175, 195 and 225. So from what I've seen, John, people like everything about that proposal, but the 225. And I want to answer that, but let's talk about our weight class. And full credit to you. I mean, we're 10 people, 10 voices on the committee. We came together, but I think you were really the impetus because you looked at this smartly. We don't want to be boxing where you're going from 115 to 118 to 122, but a 10 pound gap. And because you were there at the beginning, UFC 2, you were at UFC 1 and refereed at UFC 2 where there were no weight classes. Then there was over 200 and under 200. So you're better positioned than literally anybody in this sport, anybody on the planet, to understand the further evolution of weight classes.
Well, again, and this is, you've got to, start to evolve with what's going on. I was one of the ones that came up with the weight classes that are there now. Okay, and I was one of the ones fighting against more weight classes. So it's not like, I haven't looked at it on the other side. I did fight. I didn't want a ton of weight classes like in boxing, but we've gotten to a point with the sport. We didn't have all that many fighters. Overall, you look at, the depth of fighters that were out there, there weren't that many, that a promoter could actually hold on to for their weight classes and stuff. So we couldn't put in that many. And it wasn't, it wasn't going to be helpful to the sport. But now we have so many shows going on, other than the UFC and Bellator and World Series of Fighting, there's all these small shows going on all over the country, all over the world. And again, the weight cutting issue is a big thing. So what we're trying to do with the weights and bringing in an additional three weight classes, which is not that much, but you're giving everyone that same 10-pound difference from weight class to weight class.
Starting at 115, which was put in last year.
115 that was put in, 125, 35, 45, 55. We're going to put in a 65, put a 75. You're getting rid of the 70, which is the 65. You still have the 85. You put in a 95. You have your 205 and then a 225. Now, if you're the promoters, if you're the UFC, I understand the UFC's position in looking at this. They could possibly look and say, hey, the heavyweights is not a talent-rich depth division. And, let's take a look at what we have. If we have, 40 heavyweights on our roster, and let's say that half of them, 15 of them, want to go to that 225, that's going to deplete our heavyweights. And so you just took away the ability for us to make, allotted fights at our heavyweight division. That's going to be your most glamorous division, I guess, for most fighting. That's why people look at it that way. I don't know, but they've always looked at the heavyweights. That's the glamour division. But you don't want to deplete their division. So I can understand why they would look at it and say, we don't want to use it. And the whole thing is they don't have to use it. you know, they don't have to use that weight category at all. The UFC as a promotion can sit there and say, look at our heavyweights are going to fight at this. We don't have this weight category. And I, you know, I don't think any athletic commission is going to sit there and say, well, you must. They're going to have to look at it and say, are they going to give, you know, some type of credence to what they're saying, and they'll approve a guy that's 230 pounds, 225 pounds fighting against a guy that's 250 pounds. And I'm sure they're going to approve it, and that's okay. But this is not about doing things for the top promoters. We've got to do things for the smaller promoters, and we've got to give them the ability to have guys fighting in their shows that are fighting in a weight category that is more applicable to who they are and what they are, so they're not trying to lose all this weight to get down into the light heavyweights.
So, John, the comments that I've been hearing, that I've been reading online, comments and articles, journalists, social media, by and large, people are saying 165, 175, 195, cool. 225, terrible. Because, and what we're hearing is not the mom and pop promotions, not even Bellator, but it's the UFC. They don't have the depth. Here's my answer. UFC has a women's 115. They have a women's 135. They don't have a women's 125 division, even though a women's 125 division exists. Exactly. So the female fighters under contract to the UFC know they either have to be at 115 or 135. There are plenty who I know would move up, and there are a few who I know would move down. But that's contractually what they have. So let's say ultimately this goes through next summer by the ABC and a cruiserweight at 225 is added. The UFC has every right, as does Bellator, World Series of Fighting, the mom and pops that I go to at the roller skating rink in Topeka, Kansas, which can trickle down, and that's where the baseline, the grassroots of our sport is. They don't have to put in a cruiserweight, but let's say a cruiserweight is now there. All that means is that a fighter to fight heavyweight has to weigh 226 to 265, or in a non-title, 266 pounds. No one is making it. Just like right now in the UFC, you could fight a 135 at 126 because you're out of the 125 weight category. No one is going to make them put in a cruiserweight division. If they don't have it, no one who's walking around at 235 is going to cut because there's no division for those UFC fighters to cut to. So all you would have to do under this new change is weigh in at 226. And then I would ask rhetorically, name me one UFC heavyweight who is fighting between 206 and 225. And if they were right at that 225, they'll gain a pound or two to get above 225. So all the fears of we're out to destroy the UFC's heavyweight division and water it down are completely unfounded because we're not telling the UFC nor any promoter anything. It's there, but you don't have to use it.
Exactly. You know,
wow, I got whipped up. This is like Campbell McLaren's back on the show. Jeez.
You know, you look at... You know, there's fighters out there. Look at, you know, if you're looking at the UFC, they have a contractual agreement with Chris Cyborg, you know, and Chris Cyborg has fought her entire career in 145 pounds, and the UFC doesn't have a 145 pound division, and they're telling her you have to get down to 135. And this is part of, well, it's not the way that's the healthy way for us to look at, you know, getting Chris to fight in the UFC if she's going to do things the same way she's done in the past, and that's just be this bigger person, then cut this weight. Now we're asking her to cut 10 more pounds. If she does it the smart way and takes time and takes months to start to do this in a healthy fashion and get her weight down, she can get there, but they're not using the 145-pound weight class. And it's there, but they're not using it, and they don't have to use it, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. They can use the weight classes that they want to use for their promotion, just like Bellator can use the weight classes that they want to use for their promotion or World Series of Fighting.
Yeah, and John, Bellator doesn't have a men's 125 division.
Exactly.
Bellator doesn't have a super heavyweight division, even though it exists under the
ABC. The UFC doesn't have a super heavyweight. UFC doesn't have a super heavyweight, and it's existed since the beginning, and they've never used it.
So if you're a heavyweight that walks above 266, you need to cut down, or guess what? You're not fighting in the UFC.
Absolutely. You know, and that's fine. You know, but the thing is, there's just not that many people that are of that size that are fighting in the world of MMA. So the UFC looks at it and goes, hey, you know, we couldn't have this division. There's not enough depth. And they're right. you know, and so they don't use it. And don't blame him at all. And, you know, look at Brock Lesnar, probably would have liked it. He wouldn't have had to cut to 265, which he did all the time. But, you know, he was a bigger guy who was losing a lot of weight to get down to that weight limit that he had to make because they didn't have a super heavyweight division in the UFC.
As we talk about adding weight classes, we're looking at it from a safety perspective. It might be fun competition.
That's the only way we're looking at it.
Promoters might say this is great, more title fights, bigger ratings, more tickets. And they might say, wow, this is more of a burden. We have to pay higher contracts. We're looking at this from our committee, you and me, 100% safety. You know, when I think of a fighter like Dan Charles, I don't know if he's that well known to all of our listeners, but you and I know Dan Charles. You've refereed his fights. I've commentated them. Fights in Bellator. A lot of people, if I say Dan Charles was the one who lost to Bobby Lashley, was the second to last Bellator I commentated back in June in St. Louis on the card with the Kimbo Slice Ken Shamrock fight. Dan Charles is about 6'2". He's about my height, 6'2", and he walks right about 225 pounds. Yep. Bobby Lashley showed that Dan Charles just is not big enough physically, his bone structure, his muscular structure, to compete with those really powerful heavyweights. But yet it would be incredibly, in my opinion, unsafe for Dan Charles to try to cut down and fight as a light heavyweight. And well, he's stuck. As a cruiserweight, I think he could be top five in the world. But I don't think he can be that as a heavyweight or a light heavyweight.
You look at it, and it's not only that. It's not only that, oh, you know what, we don't want him to cut down to the 205, and we don't, because he's going to have a hard time getting there, and it's going to be unhealthy for him. But let's take a look at this in the reverse fashion and say, why is it okay for Dan Charles at 225 pounds to fight a Bobby Lashley who's weighing 250 pounds, 255 pounds, who knows? Okay, we've got a, we'll say a 30-pound weight difference there, all right? And we would never let, in a 30-pound weight difference, say, we're not going to let Robbie Lawler fight Dan Cormier.
Right.
Okay? Everyone's going to say, well, Robbie can't fight him. He's too small. We're not going to let Carlos Condit fight John Jones, okay? Everyone's going to go, well, that's ridiculous. Why are you having he's not big enough. But it's okay once guys reach a certain weight. It's no different. In the past, in the old days, it was the whole thing with the UFC is a big guy and a small guy. The small guy can win, you know, and stuff like that. It's a different fucking world. And if you haven't figured that out, everyone knows the same things now. You know, some guys are better at certain things, but everyone is doing the sport of mixed martial arts, knowing jujitsu, knowing their wrestling, knowing their striking, everyone does the same thing. So now it's not about this guy is just technically a better fighter, knows more things. Now it's about who's the better athlete, who's the guy who's more technical in a certain area. And we would never let those big weight differences happen in smaller weight classes. Everyone would say that's fucking ridiculous, but it's okay when you reach a certain weight limit. That weight doesn't matter anymore. It matters just the same.
John, as a final point on this, this is going to be an evolving and ongoing dialogue. And what I learned at that weight cutting summit last week, sitting with you in Los Angeles, for every point, there's a counterpoint. And the counterpoints I heard were often as or more valid than the points. There's no perfect solution. There's no consensus. What I love, though, is the idea of smart people, industry people coming together and saying, we recognize this as a problem. We have to figure out a solution to this problem. But you spoke to our buddy Mark Raimondi from MMA Fighting, giving the interview, and you nailed it. You said, what we're putting forward with our rules and regulations committee from the ABC, we're not saying that's the solution. We're saying that that is a piece of an ultimately larger problem that needs to be solved.
Exactly. You know, the one thing that, you know, most people don't know, Josh Thompson from Bellator, ex-UFC fighter, if you want to say that, and Bubba Jenkins from Bellator were both fighters that were at that summit. They came on their own volition because they're interested in what's going on, and they were invited to come. And I thought they did an outstanding job in both directions of trying to get people to understand, look at you. You guys are sitting here working with this, and you're going to affect my career. Josh was working from the status of saying, I want you to do it. I want you to put these guys in a place where, you know what, I'm not having to walk into the ring with a guy that is like a, you know, basically, you know, he talked about Gleason Tebow. You know, I don't want to walk into the ring with a guy that's a 190-pound guy, 185-pound guy. I want to walk into the ring with a guy that's going to be close to me. I work out. I weigh. I have to actually keep eating a lot of food to keep myself at about 170 pounds. That's where I want to be. And I lose my weight to get down to 155. And I come back up and I want to weigh exactly what I weigh when I'm working out, when I'm training. I don't want to weigh any more than that because my body is not used to carrying that weight. I want to weigh that 170 pounds. That's what I want to be at when I walk into that cage. And I'm comfortable with that. And I don't take IVs and I don't do things that you're talking about because I know what's healthy for me. And you listen to him and he goes, I want you to put these things on so everyone has to do this the right way. And you look and you go, hello, that's what we're talking about. You got Bubba Jenkins saying, look, I'm really good at manipulating this. And I know what I'm doing. And I've done this for a long time. And I like
it. He's a Division I national champion in wrestling from Arizona State.
Absolutely. And, you know, and he's a 145-pound guy fighting in Bellator who's walking into the cage probably at around 165. Okay. He's putting on, well, 165, almost to that 170 that Josh is fighting at lightweight. And, you know, there's that 10-pound difference. But he says, you know, I know how to work with that. And so, you know, I know what I'm doing, and I don't want you to affect me. And I totally understand what Bubba's saying. And I say, you know what, I agree with what you're saying. I understand it. But I can't do something because one person knows how to handle it right when I've got 1,000 that don't. And the 1,000 that don't are my problem. You being the one that does know how to handle this and do this right, that's awesome. But you're not going to help my 1,000. And I've got to weigh this out and say, where is my problem? Well, my problem's with 1,000. And you got to be smart about this. But I thought that, you know, the entire thing that went down was a lot of people went in there with ideas. And, you know, some people, you know, went in there saying, you know, we don't want to affect people. We don't want to, you know, you don't want to ever, the less you do, the better. That's just not true. Sometimes you have to take action, and you have to take action because you know there's a problem. Do we know there's a problem? Oh, we know there's a problem. And something needs to be done in a systematic fashion, being that, you know what, we're doing things about giving them more weight classes so they can actually put themselves closer to what their actual walk around weight is. Great, let's do that. But that's only one element. If we do only that one element, it's not going to work. It's not going to change anything. It's not beneficial. But if you sit there and say, all right, we're going to start to give you more time in between the weigh-in and the fight to rehydrate, does that help that? It helps it because now they're healthier because that 36-hour period is now being covered. It's not a 24-hour period. So we're able to get it to the point where their body is completely rehydrated. So that's another element. Now let's take the element of like what Josh Thompson is saying. I don't want to fight the guy who's freaking weighing 45 pounds over the weight class. Let's put in an element where, look it, as the fighter, you cannot weigh more than 10% over your scheduled weigh-in weight on the night of the fight. So now, if you are that 155-pound fighter, you can put on those 15 pounds. You can put 15 pounds of weight back on and fight. But if you go over it, you're going to start to be financially stung by the commission, taking money out of your pay because you are not fighting at the weight that we want you to be able to fight at. And if you're a championship fight, you're not going to be able to have the championship belt. So all these things are elements that need to be brought in. And then gravity, you know, talking about gravity strips and you know, seeing the hydration on people, and if they're dehydrated, not letting them fight or saying, you know, you got to throw fluids in. You got to do this until this test goes right. You know, it's one element, but those three elements together, those are the things that are going to help in making this safer for the fighters.
We want to hear from all of you listening worldwide. Let us know what you think about weight cutting, what your solutions are, or are you happy with the status quo? Whatever you think, we want to hear. Whatever you believe is valid, if that's your opinion strongly held, email us info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. And of course, every week here on Let's Get It On, Big John and I answer your questions. So ask away via email. Again, that is info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can also submit your questions on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM, and now by using the SpeakPipe app on our website, which is, again, sorry to keep repeating it, but I will, letsgetitonpodcast.com. And, of course, please include a pronunciation guide for your name. Oh, and you can also submit a question for Big John if you're one of my daughters.
Hi, Big John. This is Ellie.
Hi, Big John. This is Hadley.
What do you want for Christmas?
Man, that's a good question. You know what I want? I want there to be smart people that put in a proper weight cutting element for all fighters.
That's so much more noble than a new iPad.
I'm serious. You know, it's a matter of, you know, at my age, I don't need anything as far as presents or anything like that. And I tell my kids, don't buy me anything. And I really, you know, if I get a Christmas present, I want the Christmas present of, I want there to be the proper weight cutting elements put in, just like what the UFC has done with USADA for performance enhancing drugs. It needs to be done for our weight issue. And that's my Christmas present if it happens.
I like that answer very much. Next up, Sasha Brady, who asks, John, what is the most difficult part of refereeing apart from being able to recall the relevant rule while under pressure? For example, I often think it must be really hard to know where to look, making it very hard to catch an eye poke or groin strike.
Well, she's right. You know, and this is where, you know, people sit there and go, oh, you know, you got the best seat. A referee, if they're doing their job correctly, is not looking at the fight the way that a fan is looking at it. You're looking for certain things. You're looking at, you know, areas when a kick comes out, you're actually looking to see exactly where it hits. You're not looking at faces. You look at the face when the punch comes out or the kick goes up, but you're looking at the fight differently. And it takes time to be able to, you know, get used to picking out the things that are illegal. It's not something that just happens overnight for somebody. And you'll see young guys, when they get in there and start officiating, they miss things, and they miss things a lot. And it's because their eyes are all over the place instead of being in the place that they're supposed to be. And so it's something you have to get used to, and you have to start to train yourself to do. And even at that, you can still miss things at times, you know, that occur when guys are, you know, in close or something like that. I mean, what you'll really see a lot of guys missing are, you know, head clashes. A lot of referees miss, you know, a head clash between guys when, hey, that's illegal, you can't do it. It's not that it's being done on purpose. It's usually unintentional, and both guys coming in to throw. And as both are throwing, you know, they're going, and one guy drops down, but he drops down not because of the punch. He drops down because they clashed heads, and that knocked him silly. So it's not an easy thing to do, and she's right in the fact that sometimes it's hard for everyone to pick out.
This question from Murphy Langston, which, by the way, is a question that I've been asked quite a few times from professional fighters. John, can women be penalized for low blows just like the men are? I've had male and female fighters numerous times.
Dude, I get this question all the time. The number one question I get is, what is the greatest fight you ever refereed? And I tell everyone all the time, I can't pick out one fight out of the thousands and thousands of fights. It's impossible. You can't do it. And I get this one probably, you know, I get that one about 10 times a day. And I get this one usually about, you know, twice a week. Someone will say, what about the groin with a woman? You know, look it, as simple as it gets, the rule is no groin attacks. Okay. That's what the foul is. Now, I hate to tell you, if you haven't figured this out, it doesn't say no ball attacks, no nut shots. Okay. No
women
squeezing
do have
of testicles.
Groins, by the way.
What's that?
Women do have groins.
Yes, that's the whole point. Okay, look it. It says groin attacks. Men have groins, and yes, our testicles are attached to that area, and that's why. Women have a groin area too. And if a woman gets hit in that area with a good shot, it doesn't feel good to them. All right? I personally don't know what it's like, but I've been told by women, hey, that sucks. Okay, so the rule is no groin attacks. So if a woman ends up kneeing her opponent to the groin, it is a foul. It is handled in the same fashion that if it was two men fighting, no different.
Remember, email us your questions, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can submit them on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com, via SpeakPipe, and on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Still to come on this week's episode of Let's Get It On, Big John and I will discuss Jaideep Singh being officially named as the opponent for Fedor Emelianenko's comeback fight, set for New Year's Eve in Ryzen FF after 2 months of speculation, and we'll examine the Instagram post of Conor McGregor, in which he wrote about landing strikes to the head of Big John following his spectacular win versus Jose Aldo at UFC 194. With John McCarthy, I'm Sean Wheelock, and you are listening to Let's Get It On.
Hey, this is Darren Pang, alongside my partner Kelly Chase here on Chasing Pucks with Panger. This is our NHL podcast, and it's on NHLpodcast.com, and it's damn good. It's really good. So you got to listen up. Make sure you download us. Make sure you figure it out. Anything you want to know about the NHL, stories, we got lots of stories. Chase, do we have lots of stories?
We got stories, folks. Title in, you're going to love it. Buckle up. We came back to St. Louis. Scott Pellerin was living in my house. He was living in my house, sitting in my stall in the locker room, wearing number 39. Okay, they just gave him that number at the start of the year. We're going to have the home opener. I said to him, don't move into my house just yet because there's a small chance I'm going to get traded back to St. Louis. So don't move in today. I'll know by 3 o'clock. But the movers are coming. I said, Scotty, just... He moved in. I got traded 3:30 that day. So I'm driving back to St. Louis. I phoned Scott Pellerin. I come back in the morning for the home opener. I come down. His stuff is in my stall.
39
take 39 from him, take my stall from him, take my house back. Poor kids out, out, and out. Strike one, two, and boom. Back to the cage, kid.
No kidding.
Oh, great guy too, Scotty Pellerin.
Guys, it's the Ocho Man with the show Ocho Man Behind the 8-Ball. What can I say? This show covers it all, from sports, politics, whatever's out there of interest, we cover it all. Our co-host, we got Darman. I definitely feel that he's got a bomb shelter somewhere with right-wingers hanging out, ready to take over the world. And on the other end here, I got Nick. Nick's an alien. I really believe that Nick landed on this planet to re-educate us all, you might say. Again, check our show out every Friday. I'm sure you'll love it. Also, to find out more about our show, go to ochoman.com. I'm sure you won't be disappointed.
Behind the 8-Ball. All my life, that's where I've been.
It don't matter. You can't have it on a plane.
You're on the Polar Express. You're on a sled.
No, I'm saying that they keep it with them traditionally or whatever. You can't have that on a train or a plane or anything like that. Fuck you. I don't care what you got. I don't want you with a knife on a train or a plane or anything.
Are you okay with the beard?
I'm okay with the beard. You can have your beard, but just don't dunk it in my soup or anything.
Bad luck. That's the card in my hand.
It's the book that every MMA fan should own. It's soon to be a major motion picture, and it's now available directly from the UFC's official website. Is This Legal? The inside story of the first UFC from the man who created it, written by UFC founder Art Davey and my broadcast partner Sean Wheelock, with the foreword by me, Big John McCarthy, is available for purchase right now online at the UFCstore.com. That's right, the UFCstore.com is what you need to go to. Then type the word books into the search box and place your order. You need to learn the true and previously untold version of how the UFC was really started. If you're a fan of the UFC, you need to know how this all came about. It's a fast-paced book that names names and holds nothing back. Is This Legal is the inside story of the first UFC. Again, written by the man who created it, Art Davey, and it's available for purchase right now at the UFCFightStore.com. Go get it.
When looking for new and exciting clothing concepts, look no further than Lambs to Lions. Lambs to Lions has great designs that incorporates the past from boxing with the new and exciting evolution of MMA. We all start out as lambs, but with time, training and hard work, we can all become lions. Be part of the Lambs to Lions movement and check out all of their great designs. You can get your Lambs to Lions gear at the Las Vegas Fight Shop or go to lambstolionsbrand.com.
Now, back to Let's Get It On with your hosts, Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Back in October here on Let's Get It On, Big John and I discussed the multiple media reports that named Jaideep Singh as the opponent for Fedor Emelianenko's return to MMA. On that program, which is episode 32, in which you can hear in its entirety free of charge as part of our complete archives on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com, we asked the poll question, do you approve of Jaideep Singh as the opponent for Fedor Emelianenko's comeback fight? 92% of you voted no.
Yes.
So I don't know who the 8% were, but John, so Singh then later appeared to be out of this fight. It seemed as though he was going to be replaced by 45-year-old Tsuyoshi Kosaka, but now Ryzen FF has officially announced that it will in fact be Jaideep Singh who will fight Fedor Emelianenko in Japan on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, you know, and it's a, you know, again, I look at it and do I think it's going to be a good fight? You know, I doubt it. You know, I don't think that Jaideep Singh has the ability to fight in an MMA fight against someone like Fedor and be successful in what he's going to do. There's too much experience and too much knowledge going against him. He's had, what, two MMA fights at this point?
That is right. June of 2013 and October of this year. Both wins by TKO, but it's 2 versus 39 versus Fedor Emelianenko. And yeah, the level of competition is slightly different, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, just a little bit. Yeah, just a tad. And, you know, hey, if you're Ryzen, this is what you want, because Ryzen has somebody in Jaideep Singh who speaks perfect Japanese. The Japanese public knows him. They like him. They love Fedor. And so what does Ryzen want? Do they want Jaideep Singh to win this fight? I don't think so.
No. You know,
they want Fedor to win, and they want to, you know, move on with Fedor. And, you know, this is their attempt to make the Japanese public feel okay with a fight, because they like the guy who's being put in there. They can understand him. He can talk well. You know, this is called promotion. And, you know, sometimes you get fights, you know, like in the UFC, you know, what you saw in the last month here, and, you know, all through December, the four shows they put on, all of their fights, for the most part, there was a couple crappy ones, you know, and that they can't do anything about that, but, you know, all of their top fights, every one of them, competitive, you know, outstanding, you know, records, outstanding fighters that are going in and competing against each other and putting on great shows. You know, that's one aspect of fighting. The Japanese aspect is also the pro wrestling side and the entertainment side. And they really buy in and try to push that aspect of fighting. And so in this fight, you don't have that real competitive, you know, matchup. You don't have that, wow, this is a toss up and who can win this fight. And you're going in knowing that 92% of you think it's going to win it at least.
Well, Singh is very accomplished in kickboxing, in Japanese fighting, not just MMA, but Japanese fighting. He's pretty much a star, if not a superstar. He's amassed 40 wins and 51 pro bouts. He won the 2009 K1 World Grand Prix and the 2011 Rise Heavyweight Tournament. All of that being said, he has two pro MMA fights against Fedor Emelianenko, who at one time for me was certainly the pound-for-pound top fighter in the sport. I would make the case that, eras aside, he's probably the greatest fighter in the history of our sport. He's 39 now, Fedor Emelianenko. He hasn't fought since June 2012. I don't think he's ever going to be the Fedor Emelianenko of even 2008 or 2009. But on paper, John, this looks like a squash.
Well, it does, but, you know, the one thing I can tell you is this. On paper, everyone's looking at it going, that is a piece of crap. This is no good. And they said the same thing about Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey. That's a piece of crap. That's going to be no good. Ronda's going to squash her. And what happened? This is why they fight the fight, because you don't know for sure. Yes, on paper, I'm going to honestly put it out, Fedor should win the fight. No doubt he should win the fight. But all it takes is one shot. All it takes is Fedor not fighting like he used to fight. All it takes is, you know what, Jaideep Singh coming out and putting on a clinic as far as how to strike and move and pick somebody apart, because that's his strength. That's why they fight the fight. We'll see. You know, everyone in the end can say, I told you so. Or there might be someone out there saying, ah, You never saw that coming, did you? And, you know, that's why, will I watch? I'll be watching.
Well, John, you could be refereeing because we might be breaking some news here. I don't know if any of the media sites have picked up on this in mixed martial arts. You have been assigned to both of these rising cards. It's going to be on the 29th in Japan. That's card number one. And then 2 days later on New Year's Eve, the 31st of December. You don't know your bout assignments. You'd never know that as a referee until you're on site, usually a few hours before. But you will definitely be at these cards. And it's going to either be you or Yuji Shimada. Olivier Coste, who I met at ONE Championship, who's one of their top referees, the Frenchman, he told me that he's been assigned to this card. My guess would be, as heavyweights, you'll probably draw this fight, but regardless, you're going to be there. I know you're just like me as a commentator when I've refereed boxing. We don't care who wins or loses. We're there for the integrity of the fights and above that fighter safety, but you're going to have to obviously have some thoughts in your head knowing just where these two fighters are coming from. You could have another Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo situation where you have to jump in under 20 seconds. Possibly.
You never know. And you know, that's what makes fighting what it is. You don't know. And it's like you can break this down and you can look and I've watched Jadeep fight and I know where he's strong. I know where I think he's not too strong, even though I haven't been able to see him in certain areas that, you know, when we talk about MMA, but you look at Fedor, Fedor's been working out mostly in Holland. Why? Because he knew who he was fighting. he's fighting a kickboxer and he's fighting a guy that's good with his hands in the stand-up position. So he wants to be prepared for that. But, you know, there's certain things about Fedor. Fedor is good with his takedowns. His judo is very strong and his ground game, as far as his ground and pound, is as strong as anybody's that was ever out there. And so if Jadeep ends up underneath Fedor, you know, that's not going to be where he wants to be. He's going to want to be in that position where he's standing up. That's going to give him the best opportunity to do what he's good at and to win the fight.
John, we've talked about this a lot on Let's Get It On over the past year. Promotions never want to be in a position where they need, not want, promoters want fighters to certain fighters to win all the time where they need a fighter to win. The UFC may have wanted, and I'm speculating, may have wanted Ronda Rousey to beat Holly Holm. They didn't need her to. Maybe they wanted Jose Aldo to beat Conor McGregor. Maybe not. They didn't need either one of those fighters to win. Ryzen FF, and I say this with all respect and peace and love, they need Fedor Emelianenko to win this fight. He is their flag bearer as they try to essentially relaunch Pride with Nobuyuki Sakakibara.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. This is going back, if you're looking at, you know, situations for promotions, you know, there's been times when I think the UFC has thought that one fighter was going to win over another and then were shocked when it didn't happen. And, you know, that's just part of being the promoter. But they, like you said, they didn't need. It's not like their show starts to fall apart or the promotion starts to have a problem because that fighter has now been beat. You can go back to Elite XC. They really got into that position when they had
Kimbo.
They
needed Kimbo Slice to win.
Absolutely.
They didn't want him to. They needed him to.
And that's never a good position for a promotion to be in. Because, again, like, you know, I'm saying, dude, this is why they fight the fight. You don't know for sure. There is no guarantee. You can sit there and say all the things that you want. You can sit there and break down all of the, you know, intricacies of their abilities and their techniques and what they do and who they fought and how long they fought. And all it takes is one thing to happen and that fight can go in a different direction than you ever saw. So, you know, it's not a good position for Ryzen to be in. That's not good at all. You never, ever want to be in that position where I need a specific fighter to win. When you're in that position, you've got some trouble coming your way.
Every week here on Let's Get It On, we bring you our poll question. You can cast your vote on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Last week we asked, do you feel that Conor McGregor is now the biggest star in MMA? 89% of you voted yes. So almost as many McGregor fans as Singh detractors, 89% yes. This week's poll question, will you watch the Fedor Emelianenko versus Jadeep Singh fight New Year's Eve and Ryzen FF? Vote yes or no on our website. Let's get it on podcast.com.
Being that it
I'm
is
absolutely
free.
Watching this.
It is free.
But in the United Spike States and Canada, free on Spike. It's on tape delay,
but
free on Spike.
That's the best part about it. Because if you go to all these other countries, you know, in Europe and, you know, Russia and all these, you get to see the UFC pay-per-views for free, you know? And I'm always like, that's just not fair. But now I get to see, or you can see, the Fedor fight here in the States for free. That's the way it's supposed to be.
It's not going to be live, though. I think that's really going to hurt the U.S. and Canadian television audience. But as we've talked about in the past on this program, Ryzen FF is first and foremost concentrated on Japan. The U.S. is important. Canada is important. The rest of Asia is. Western Europe. The U.K. But primarily, they want to succeed in Japan. And that was Nobuyuki Sakakibara's principal philosophy in Pride. You know, I was the last English language television commentator. I'm so incredibly proud of that. That's one of the things I'm most proud of in my career. But I can tell you, having been a commentator for Pride, we were the B show. The A show was what was going on in Japan. And I think it's the same philosophy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's, you can't blame them. That's where their money's going to come from. You know, you got to, you know, be in that position where, hey, you're taking care of the most important market that you have. And for them, the most important market they have is the Japanese market.
John, so the question for Fedor Emelianenko, assuming, and I don't like to assume anything in MMA nor in life, but assuming for the sake of this conversation, Fedor Emelianenko defeats Jaideep Singh. You have to think, what is next? Again, he's 39 years old. He's my all-time favorite fighter, and I got to know him as a person when I commentated in M1. I think he's just a tremendous person, kind, humble, just really everything that I admire in people. And then I've always been a huge fan of him before I knew him as a fighter. But they're trying to build a promotion around him. You know, they're having stars on loan like Shinya Aoki from ONE Championship. Brennan Ward and King Mo Lawal are coming in on loan from Bellator, but they're trying to develop their own name in Ryzen FF, their own stable of fighters, just like Sakakibara did in Pride. But where do you go? Let's say Emelianenko wins in a squash. Let's say it's a competitive fight. Anywhere in between, it doesn't matter. Where do they go with Fedor Emelianenko? And they're already saying their next card won't be until August.
I don't know where they go with him. Yeah, they're gonna have to
Have a clue, honestly. I really don't. What do you do with Fedor Emelianenko?
Yeah, you don't, because again, you're in that position where I can't have one of the, you know, guys that are, you know, are top guys out there come and fight him, because there's a possibility they're gonna, you know, I'm taking a big chance they can win the fight. You know, and there's guys out there. You can look at, you know, the Bellator still has, you know, Minnikoff as their heavyweight champion, even though they've got contractual problems and he hasn't fought there for a while. But if you took Vitaly Minnikoff and you put him against Fedor, you got a real fight. Now, it's two Russians, you know, but that's a fight that either guy can win. That's a toss-up fight.
And, oh, I think Minnikoff wins that, John.
Yeah, okay, and there you go. And that's what, you know, that's the position that I don't think that Ryzen has the ability to get into, where before, when they were with Pride, you know, when Fedor was in there, you know, Fedor fought, you know, Heath Herring, because he was, you know, an up and coming guy in there, and he destroyed Heath. And, you know, and then he gets into the battles and wars with Nogueira when Nogueira was champion, and he wins the belt from him. You know, Nogueira was their guy. It didn't matter who won, because then they just go with Fedor, and then they had Fedor, and they bring Krokop in to, you know, try to take the title from him. And it didn't matter if Fedor won or if Krokop won, they could move on from there. That's the position you want to be in as the promoter, but that is really not the position that Ryzen's in right now with their new promotion.
If a boxing promoter convinced Mike Tyson to end his long retirement and come back, doesn't matter who the opponent is, people are going to watch. The question, though, promotionally would be, what do you do with Mike Tyson? And I'm not saying that Fedor Emelianenko is Mike Tyson or vice versa, but they're both two incredibly well-known, dynamic fighters in their respective combat sports who people are going to watch. The opponent, as I think Jaideep Singh is really proving, is almost secondary. People are talking about the Fedor Emelianenko fight. They're not talking about the Fedor Emelianenko versus Jaideep Singh fight. Look no further than the fact that we're less than 30 days from this bout before they make the opponent announcement.
Well,
can you imagine the UFC doing that? You're 30 days in and you're saying Conor McGregor will be fighting, and as
TBD.
According to our listeners, he's the biggest star in the sport. Who's his opponent? We'll get to that. Don't bother TBD. Me with the details. TBD.
To be decided.
It's unthinkable, though. It really is. And yet that's the promotional philosophy here, because Sakakibara is thinking people are going to buy their tickets and watch on television worldwide based on one fighter, not on both fighters or on the fight itself.
Yep. And, you know, again, promoters make mistakes all the time. You know, they're people, and, you know, they get an idea about that they need to have one person. I always look at it, you need to have good fights. It doesn't matter. You know, you can have, you know, the greatest fighter in the world and he's in a smash fight, you'll get some people to put their eyes on it. But a lot of people say, I don't want to watch that. It doesn't matter to me. I know who's going to win. And so you've got to have competitive fights. When you have fights that are competitive, it gets both sides, you know, going. And you get people that believe in this fighter and you get, you know, people that believe in the other fighter. That's what you want. That's what you need to be successful in the fight game. And it's the one thing that, you know, Ryzen is going to have to work towards as they move on in the future.
I'll definitely be watching this fight. Again, Nobuyuki Sakakibara was so nice to me when I worked for Pride. My really close friend, Jerry Millen, who I owe a lot of my MMA announcing career to, who hired me at Pride and brought me to M1, is involved. So I'm rooting for this promotion. Had my year turned out a little differently, I may have actually been commentating this fight. That didn't quite work out for me. But I'm really excited for it. I just think we're asking really valid promotional questions.
It is. You know, and you got to be fair. And, you know, the Ryzen's got to look at everything that's going to be said. And they got to look at it all and figure out where they need to move from the point after the fight, which whatever happens with it. You know, they've got to work at putting on fights that people want to see. Now, obviously, they need to work at putting on fights that the Japanese public wants to see more than fights that, you know, someone in the U.S. wants to see. That doesn't matter so much to them. But they've got to start to get the public in Japan, you know, being enthralled by what's coming next. So they spend their money, come and buy and put their butts in a seat. That's what they need. Or they need those TV ratings there in Japan, because TV ratings are huge, especially when you get into the New Year's Eve situation. That's everything there.
Well, this week, Conor McGregor posted a photo on his Instagram account, which shows Big John stopping his fight versus Jose Aldo from this month's UFC 194. McGregor then added the following text, and I am quoting now, "Most will see one unconscious man here. I see a clean getup about to happen in a fight against multiple attackers." McGregor then continued, "If Big John was a second attacker, he is in trouble. I am a split second away from being back to my feet here. With his outstretched forward-reaching pressure and his torso separated from his hips, Big John is ending up face down after the getup. Two or three quick cracks to his temple, and I make my escape clean. Two attackers immobilized." John, I'm a big fan of Conor McGregor. I think he's great for the UFC. I think he's great for our sport of MMA. But this is really, really odd.
Oh, no. It's fucking hysterical. I love
You're such a good person. I knew you would have this reaction. You really don't let anything bother you. You're such a good person.
Oh, no. Obviously, you know, because Conor didn't just sit there and look at a picture and go, oh, this is what I'm going to say. Obviously, someone somewhere, being the way that people are on social media, went and said something to the effect of, you know, oh, Big John knocked you on your ass or something like that, which is not what I'm attempting to do. I'm just attempting to get him to stop and be off of, you know, Jose. And he looked at it and came up with this entire thing of, well, that's what most people are seeing. But let me break this down for you. And the way he breaks it down is freaking classic. I just think it's absolutely hysterical. You know, whatever people think off of it and stuff, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not attacking Conor McGregor in that situation. If I was going to attack him, I would attack him a little bit different. But it's a matter of, you know.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just have to say, so if it was two attackers, why, if he knocked out your partner in the attack, would you then try to move him away? Why would you not then assume the top position or start striking him from the side or behind? Oh, as a second attacker, it's like one of those Steven Seagal films where they don't quite coordinate their attack against Seagal.
You know what? I think the funny part to me in this whole thing is the way some people then they look at it. And I got sent all this stuff. You know, what are you going to do when he's saying this about you? And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? You think I'm taking it serious? You know, and then there's reporters that actually have posted and say, you know, the insight and the intrigue behind this. It's like, you know, okay, I don't know what to say other than you're freaking out. Tard. Okay. It's not something, you know, if someone thinks that this is what's gonna, you know, make me mad, I think it's fucking brilliant and I think it's hysterical. Just the fact that he looks at it and goes, well, what most people are seeing here is two men on the thing, but what's really occurring is take a look at my hand. And the fact that he breaks it down the way is that he's gonna get up, he's gonna land two shots to the temple, and he's gonna make his escape. You know what? Touche, Connor. I love it.
John, if you were 25, would you have the same reaction?
No, I would not. And I'd say, really?
Thanks.
So. It would be very, very different. And I'd say, hey, really, motherfucker? Come here. Let's see what you can do. And it would be completely different. But since I'm way over 25. Yeah,
I think totally a lot different. Of people just know you as the best referee in our sports history, and that's fair enough. But I just want to put it as an aside because you're way too humble and have too much humility to do this. You were a scholarship athlete in Division I university. You've been an amateur boxer. You do hold the rank of black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You're also a uniformed LAPD officer working with, what, anti-gang units? So, oh, and you're twice Conor McGregor's weight. It's just preposterous. It really, I'm glad you see this in the holiday spirit and take it for what it is and not having the 25-year-old's reaction, although that would have been pretty funny too. I just found it odd, and you told me how respectful Conor McGregor was to you in pre-fights and your meeting and then during the fight and afterwards. I just didn't know where it came from, but I don't know Conor McGregor personally, even though I'm a big fan of his as a fighter and his persona. Maybe it's very tongue-in-cheek.
Honestly, knowing what I know of him and the times that I've spoken to him, it's exactly, it's a matter of him having someone say something to him. He's like, oh, here, I'll break this down in a different way then. You'll see, I honestly, when I was 25, I probably would have been mad at it. At 53, I'm not mad at it at all. I think it's hysterical. I think it's brilliant that he actually, sat there and came up with, take a look at the hand and, outstretched the, for my fast get up and I'm going to land two shots to the temple because his hands are outreach and his weight's going to come forward. You just look at it and you go, wow, he actually put some thought into that. That's pretty good,
So, but, John, if you and Jose Aldo ever actually do a two-on-one fight with Conor McGregor.
He's in trouble.
Implement your attack better so you don't get into that position. That's all I'm saying. Be a little smarter when you guys coordinate the attack. Maybe you both strike him at the same time.
Well, the next time that we do this, I'll plan it better. I will.
This made me think of Tank Abbott. You wrote about it in your book, and you've told me the stories of Tank Abbott. Is that probably the one fighter in your history, going back to your first refereeing of UFC 2, that you felt like maybe there was some legitimate heat? Because there's no legitimate heat here, and I think we've put it to bed now with your comments. If anybody thought there was or was hoping there was, there's not. But was Tank Abbott the one that you actually did? I know he was really, really disrespectful to your great wife, Elaine.
Well, that was the only time. I never had a problem with Tank. And, Tank in person with me, alone, and what, persona in the public, two totally different types of people. And, I never had a problem with Tank. I traveled with him. I went places with him and stuff and, never had a problem. The problem I had is when Tank ended up, threatening my wife. Now, he was drunk off of his ass. Okay, but at the time I didn't care. And, trust me, I tried to find him. I went to his hotel room. I did not appreciate what he did at all. And
this was the 25-year-old version of you, not the 53-year-old version.
Yeah, this is the 30-some-year-old version. It was a completely different version of John McCarthy. But, and that's just the way it was. But, in the end, just different, completely different. I never really had a problem with Tank other than the one thing, and that, that got resolved. My wife was satisfied with it, so I said, all right, I'm satisfied with it. That's whatever. But, it's you're going to get guys doing stuff at times. When you bring family or something like that, that's different. If you don't like something I do, attack me, go ahead and attack me. Don't attack my family. Even at 53, I won't like that.
On the McGregor comments, I know your kids, like my two girls are, you have two sons and a daughter. They're very protective of you. I love the fact that your kids are protective of you. My little girls are so protective of me and what people say and what they read and hear. How did your kids react to the McGregor comments?
I haven't talked to any of them about it. My kids are old and gone, so.
I think they have, especially your daughter. I don't think your daughter's going to like this.
She may not like it, but she hasn't said anything to me. I haven't heard from her, so I doubt that she even knows about it.
She will now.
Oh, yeah, she will now. Now I'm going to have an irate army person coming with their M4 to take care of Conor McGregor.
John, we're having a lot of fun with this story, and we see it for what it is. But the big picture is, what about the superstardom now of Conor McGregor? The fact that he has an incredible win over an incredible champion in Jose Aldo. Again, the poll results, and we have great listeners, really smart, knowledgeable fight fans from around the world saying yes, overwhelmingly, they're voting Conor McGregor is now the biggest star in our sport of mixed martial arts. He can put up an Instagram post, and this becomes a major news story. I actually read an online article from the Irish Times. This has gotten big, and it's an Instagram post about kind of a fantasy speculation.
Oh, you know, the thing, if you look at, you know, what's going on with him is he's getting in everyone's head, especially, you know, Nate Diaz wins his fight against Michael Johnson. What a great performance he had. And, you know, for first person he's calling out, Conor McGregor. Hoffi, you know, and you look at Hoffi, he goes, Dos Anjos beats Donald Cerrone in 66 seconds. Now that's something in itself, and look phenomenal, and just look physically phenomenal, performed phenomenally. And the first thing he said is, Conor McGregor, here, you want to come up here? Come up here. This is my weight division. Come on, I want you. And Conor, you know, the people are going to be sitting there, you know, looking at Conor sitting there going, I love it, because they do all want him. And he is doing exactly what he wants. And then he comes out with the comment, all of you get down on your knees and start to beg. You know, you look and you go, oh my God. He comes up with some of the crazy stuff. He puts out, I think, an Instagram thing of him driving a Rolls Royce, you know, Shadow. It's only like a $450,000 car he's in there, right? And he's just like, I'm the king. Well, you know what? He's playing the part well. And although, you know, there's a lot of talk, he walks the walk, because everything that he has done inside of the cage, he has done in an extraordinary fashion. He's done exactly what he said he was going to do. You know, look at, he said he was going to knock out, you know, you can look at the guys that he's fought. You know, when he fought Max Holloway, that's been his hardest fight in the UFC. He fought Marcus Brimage, fights Max Holloway, beats Max Holloway on a decision, you know, then comes and starts to actually get some, you know, real, you know, traction. But his first major fight, you know, he fought Brandao and stuff, but he fought Dustin Poirier. And Poirier was a guy who was ranked, and Poirier is good. He's a good fighter. And he said, I'm going to knock him out in the first round. And he does it. And you go, damn. You know, he talks about Dennis Seaver. I'll have him out by the second round. He does it. You know, he brings and comes to the point where now he's going to fight, you know, Aldo. It doesn't happen. Mendez, he'll be gone by the second round. Does it. Says he's going to knock Aldo out in the first round. Does it. And you look and you go, holy shit, where is this guy's crystal ball? Because, I mean, the crystal ball that he's got, it's freaking good. It's freaking on fire, you know. And the fact that he's, you know, coming up with all this stuff and then pulling it off the way he's saying, you know, what more can you say? He freaking walks the walk. You know, and right now he's the king. He's got him going. He's got all these people, man. There's people that are pissed at him that want to fight him. There's people that want him because, you know what? That's a hell of a payday they think they can get off of fighting him. Whatever. He's got everyone looking in his direction. Or if he's
Conor
fighting referee.
McGregor. That's exactly right. With Conor McGregor, this is true of all of our great listeners around the world and everybody who's an MMA fan, from the marginal fans to the hardcores. Some might love him, some might hate him. Absolutely no one is ignoring Conor McGregor.
That's it.
We are back with you next week for an all-new episode of Let's Get It On, first available on Friday. Download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/letsgetitonpodcast, and on Twitter, at PodcastMMA for this show, and for us personally, at JohnMcCarthyMMA and at Sean Wheelock. To ask us a question, make a comment, or inquire about becoming a sponsor of Let's Get It On, email us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Again, that is info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. For Big John McCarthy, producer Chris Lakin, and our entire crew, I'm Sean Wheelock. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been a presentation of Lineup Media Group, online at lineupmediagroup.com.
Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever you listen to the show. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in sponsoring Let's Get It On, contact us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Get all the lineup Media Group podcasts like Jason Bucks and Panger on NHLpodcast.com, Ocho Man Behind the Eight Ball, and You're On the Clock NFL on our website at lineupmediagroup.com.